Well, Facebook basically needs to go live after Crowdcast goes live. So I need to go and press a few buttons for it all to happen. Otherwise, it doesn't happen. So it's very strange. But yeah, ice baths in Switzerland. Let me just say, I'll probably never visit Switzerland as a result of your unkind offer.
I'm threatening.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know what? I understand the value of it. And you understand that, you know, sometimes to shock the immune system is what you need, right? That's the idea.
Exactly.
So the theory, I think, is sound. But right now, it's 15 degrees in London. I feel a little bit chilly. And already I'm thinking, yeah, ideally it needs to be 25 degrees. So I'm not sure ice baths in the Alps is what I need right now. Anyway, we're live.
We're live, everybody.
So welcome to Brain Food Live on Air, everyone. It's episode 59. We've got an amazing episode for you today. We're going to be talking about online recruiter communities and why you should join one of these. And in fact, how do you behave when you're in there? Like, how do you get maximum value out of being a community member in one of these places? So it's going to be a superb session. We've got some great guests with us as well. Super exciting. Anyway, a couple of bits of housekeeping as usual before we begin. So just a quick sound check and AV for us. Again, we're multicasting across LinkedIn, Facebook, Periscope, you name it. We're just chucking this out there at you. So for the folks on LinkedIn, if you can hear me, just please say, yes, Hung, I can hear you. Quick comment below to say, yes, Hung, get on with it. That would be good for me to know. On Facebook, sorry, I screwed up last time, folks. I tried to go live. I did not press a button, basically, and it didn't go live. So I apologize.
But
hopefully, yeah, it happens, especially when Hung Lee is involved. Incompetence is the name of the game. Anyway, if you're on Facebook and the Facebook group and you can hear this, just comment quickly below on the comment thing just to say, hello, I can hear you. On Periscope, if you can say the same, that would be great. Gary Turner, thank you very much. I think everyone can hear us on Crowdcast, which is great. Okay, I think we're ready to go. Okay, firstly, I need to also announce, very strangely actually, but because this product is actually getting deprecated, I found out. But Seen by Indeed are actually still sponsoring this product, this Crowdcast. So, quick shout out to our boys at Seen by Indeed, still going as a product up until July, I believe. So still go on there and check them out. You can hire software engineers through that product, but it's sadly getting deprecated later this year. On to the show. Very excited today. Super excited because once again, Adam Gordon has been upgraded. It's always my sort of mission to do this. And this week he's been upgraded to Fanny Comba. Fanny, how are you doing? Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Hung, for having me. I'm doing great, actually. I'm calling from Switzerland, so pretty nice weather today and nice atmosphere.
Yeah, great. And wonderful to have you on the show, particularly talking about this topic, because communities is something you've been involved in over in Switzerland and with True Geneva and stuff like this. And also, I think you'd be perfect person to, you know, interact with the two guests that we've got on, James and Emma, who are going to come on a bit later. So super exciting stuff. Anyway, we start off as usual, Fanny, by reviewing last week's Brain Food. Now, firstly, did you read it? And if so, what was interesting for you in last week's issue?
Every time I want to make the joke to say, well, I did not read it. And I would wonder how you would go on with this, however.
It will be a deal breaker. Literally, the show would cease immediately because we need to have this segment. Without the segment, I just would not know how to do the transition. So
no, obviously I read it. It's my Sunday meeting. It's the only reason I read my emails on Sunday is to read the Brain Food. And I picked up two articles for this time that I found pretty interesting or very interesting. The first one is extremely interesting in terms of content, but also in terms of format. And it's so rare, from my experience, to have content that is really well done format-wise as well. And the article called Culture First Start With Today is really amazing. So it gives you very interesting advices on how to face this COVID situation you were into on a culture more level and on our psychological level. It shows you a different way on managing your mind and your personal well-being. You have a podcast, you have an article, you have tips, you have curated content within this whole article. And I thought that was really super well done and well constructed. So big kudo and thumbs up on this one.
You know what? That's amazing to hear you say that from a, because you obviously you do employer branding, recruitment marketing, and all this type of stuff. So you think a lot about how you construct content. And I agree with you entirely. This thing wins because not only is the content amazing, but how it's kind of put together and presented and communicated to you is, I think, groundbreaking. So in other words, this is by Damon Klotz, by the way, good brain food, a friend of ours at Culture Amp. And he's basically launched this new series, clearly put a bunch of work into it. But it's essentially a multi-channel, multimedia way of consuming the content. Mm-hmm. So if you want to read short form, you can go ahead and read some short, like snippet type stuff. If you want to read a long essay, you can do that. If you want to go into the podcast, you can do it. If you can, and kind of, the entire thing takes you through a journey. So you can see how the information is architected together. They've thought a lot about the user experience and the user journey. And I felt I was exploring it as I was going through it and thinking, wow, this is great. I want to listen to that. I want to consume this. Really, really well put together. So in the Crowdcast, I've just shared the link there. It's called Start With Today. It is about COVID-19 and how actually you need to take care of your mental health as well. So regardless of how it's presented, content is amazing. But please do pay attention to how they've done it, because that, I think, is a great lesson for how content is probably going to go in future. Much more interactive, much richer, and a combination of text, video, and everything else, right?
For me, it's so rare to be able to read a piece of content and not get bored after two lines. Usually, it's just, even if the piece of content is really good, like my mind goes away right away. Whereas here, because of the diversity of type of content, it's just amazing.
Yeah.
I enjoyed as well the emoji sourcing article. That was really straight to the point and quite funny. She put it in a very funny way, I thought. And it's interesting. I've never considered using the emojis in the way she's using it for the search and for, like, for example, phone numbers on LinkedIn directly. And I thought it was pretty a useful tip, but very quick tip to get and easy to apply. So good.
This is a brilliant article by Trish Verdica, I think she's called. But basically, folks, you can actually search a search engine using emojis. So sourcing, if you source for, let's say, the phone number symbol, you've got half a chance that there's going to be a bunch of phone numbers on the end of that. And if you're able to mix that in with whatever search terms you're looking for, there's half a chance, again, that you might get actually the direct phone number for someone who you might be targeting. So, I mean, that was a jaw dropper for me. I mean, I just never assumed that you could do this. Of course, you can, because the machine is dumb. It's not going to recognize the difference between a symbol and a letter, which, of course, is a symbol. Mm-hmm. So the same category as far as the search engine is concerned. So I didn't know anything about this. In fact, hands up anybody who did. If you did know that you could search a search engine using emojis, raise your hand and say you knew it. I had no clue, but it could actually unlock a door for a lot of profiles you'd never see.
And it's pretty interesting because she gives also a different kind of emojis that she tested and to see how it performed and how it worked, also with the emails symbol. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, the email one's a classic, right?
I mean, it's
the
a envelope, classic one, yeah.
Obviously, a lot of websites have this, and people like to put the cute emoji in instead of the E number or whatever, the E sign or whatever. And of course,
smart.
You can search
smart.
Against that. So really smart.
And you can save so much time. So pretty easy tip. And the last one I picked up, it's also because we are in a video format here or in a conference format. And one was a BBC report on how to be a video conference work star. And my aim when I read the title, I was like, okay, is Hung Lee a conference work star? So I tried to check every point, like, is it doing it right or not, or right or not? And you seem to be pretty good, according to the list.
Oh, yeah, so pretty good is not obviously. What am I doing? What am I doing right? What am I doing wrong? Because this is a great article, but I realize I probably am not walking the talk on this. What am I doing right? What am I doing wrong?
So one of the things that is really important is the sound. So you put a very important point when you invite guests or co-hosts that sound is really good, and that, for example, you use this and not Wi-Fi, wireless speakers, etc. So for this, you're really good, I would say. The visual part, like to have enough lights and like good backgrounds, and that it's we can see you well. I think it's okay and it's good as well. However, there is one thing is the level that you put your camera. So you should never have the camera too low for two reasons. No one wants to have the double chin. And the other reason is like in terms of non-verbal communication, it gives like an impression of like you're overcoming people when you're too much on the top, and it's not like an equal conversation or equal relationship. So it has to be on the high, on the eyes level.
So and raise my so for instance, is this better?
So like that this? Would be good to be a little bit higher. However, like frame you have to frame with your shoulder in, like at least your shoulder or your like can you say your torso. To give a little bit of sense of you're not only a head, like floating head, but you can also communicate with your hands, because nonverbal communication is also very important on the video. So that's important.
But I'm lifting the laptop with both my hands now, so the nonverbal sort of gesturing is not happening. But folks, I mean, is this a better angle? I'd love to get your comments, actually. If this is a better angle for you than my normal, which is here, please let me know, because like this is really good feedback, and actually we all need to get better at camera. I'm going to do a show particularly on this, actually. I think in the next couple of next month we will be talking about how like technically to get better on camera, because I think we all are learning as we go, and I've just defaulted to this because it was kind of okay.
I'm kidding. Yeah. This is good, but some people you can see that are really coming from the bottom, and it's disturbing. It feels like they're huge on you. And the other thing is that they say that you should look at the lens, like to the camera lens, but it's this is so hard to do because it feels like it's really hard. It's better when you look at the other person, I feel like, when you're speaking.
I think the for me, I mean, this is probably my vanity, but I end up looking at myself more than anybody else. Because you know what I mean? On a split screen, I'm looking at
myself. Do you have something in your head?
What's in my teeth or anything like this? And basically, my eyes are always looking at the corner. So this is definitely something I need to get better. I need to project like this and talk directly to the camera. But then I can't see your face, right? So I don't know whether you're reacting to that and how we're doing it. So all very, very interesting. But great tips. I've just shared the link, by the way, in the Crowdcast chat stream. Did I do that? No, I didn't. Let me share it again, because it was a really useful, basically this BBC reporter, who obviously you would imagine would know about cameras, camera angles and so on. Just basically, you must have been very disappointed at the, I've already sent that. Yeah, it must have been very disappointed at the experience of seeing all of these Zoom videos being terrible. And then just said, hey, listen, here's how you fix that. Because obviously, this guy works in front of the camera. I think he's a guy. He kind of works in front of the camera. Please do read that. We can all upgrade, all get better. And really important we do that, because actually a bad experience it reflects on the other person, right? The other person feels the bad experience, bad audio, bad video. It just makes the entire thing degrade. And actually for a show like this, where we're doing a live stream, the audience will definitely start dropping away if you have bad audio. There's no question, the tolerance is really low. So if you're ever doing webinars, in-person meetings, whatever, the attention that people have is very precious, and it will fly away if you don't give them the right UX.
And I guess now we're losing the attention if we don't switch to the topic of the day, right?
Well, 100%. We've lost two people already, you know? I've actually noticed the more I talk, the more people actually disappear. So that's for Hongli. Okay, let's go on to it. We're going to be talking recruitment communities, why they're important. Now, before we bring on Emma and James, who are super famous, by the way, in the UK recruiting scene, I just wanted to ask you the question also, Fanny, as a person who's kind of been a mover and shaker in the Swiss scene in terms of putting together a community, what is do you think is the primary value you've got from being like a community organizer?
So being on the side of the organization, in that case of True Geneva, so from the True Community, that was really added value for the recruitment. It's not only recruitment in Switzerland, it's the whole HR community. We extended a little bit. So it really helped in gathering people together who were only gathering around fairs in like a few years ago and did not interact with each other, did not exchange on important topic. And most importantly, we're always hiding behind like the corporate name. So they were representing this and that company. Whereas being part of the community, it puts yourself in it. It's not your company. It's nothing like this. It's only you as a human being who has an experience, who has some knowledge, some know-how, and who is here to share, to give, and to take. And you can take as much as you can give. So it's that side of it that was really successful and important in Switzerland.
Folks, I think that's one of the most important points. The value of online recruiting or HR communities is that it gets you out from behind the company brand. So most of the time when, you know, you were operating, we're representing the company, we're very conscious of our role in representing the companies there. But without these communities, these communities allow us essentially to escape from outside of the brand a little bit and just be ourselves and then build, I think, richer relationships as a result. So really good and important point.
But that requires, that. It requires something very important in my opinion. And I think that's a topic we'll discuss over the next 45 minutes, it's trust. You can only put yourself into and give valuable content, valuable advices and experience only if you trust the community. In sense, it can be online or it can be in-person community, but you have to trust. And in order to trust, it has to be to have certain rules to follow and that are either very clearly stated or some kind of unspoken rules. And that's something I'd love to talk with our two guests is those rules and how, like how to figure out these rules and how to follow them and what are the do's and don'ts in that direction, because I think it's key.
All right. There's a second great point, folks. Basically, trust is also dependent on a kind of sense of safety, isn't it? And that safety comes from having shared rules and shared norms. Essentially, if you have people behaving in a way that contravenes those norms or the stated purpose of the group, etc., that trust factor will recede really quickly. This is quite anthropological. Like how communities and how to run good communities. This is really super interesting. Anyway, let's bring on two folks that know how to do this. Probably even better than you and I, Fanny, because you know, James Osborne runs. I'll bring James on now. He runs. Both these people run businesses as communities, or communities as businesses, full time. So they've evolved it. Okay, Emma, I have an Emma here, and I believe that's Emma Merrington. But Emma, you're just an Emma, so it could be a random Emma. but if it's random Emma, that's also fine. Okay, come on screen, random Emma.
Welcome. James, are you there?
James, can you hear us?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, yes. We can hear you fine. How are you doing, man?
I'm very good. Hungry to see you again this week. I'll tell you, you're spoiling me with the amount of interaction I'm getting with you. Fanny, lovely to meet you.
Yeah, me too.
James, before we begin, I just wondered whether, for the people who don't know you, can you just introduce yourself real quick and tell us who you are?
Yeah, sure. So James Osborne, I founded the Recruitment Network about 4 years ago, which is a community for recruitment leaders, agency recruitment leaders around the world. We also run TRN World, which is our online platform community as well. And we've been advising recruitment companies now for about 10, 12 years as advisors and non-exec directors, but we're now using the power of the community and the peer-to-peer to help improve what we do. So our job is to help companies move forward. And over this period, we went out and we've offered all of our services for free to any recruitment agency out there around the world. So we're doing 100 times more work than we've ever done before, but we're not getting paid for it. So it's a genius plan, which is great. But it's absolutely the right thing to do, because I think there's a lot of people out there that need a lot of help and support, and I think the communities do that really well.
Yeah, fantastic, James. And by the way, it was, what's really cool about this particular distribution of the guests is that James basically focuses on the recruitment agency market, and Emma, who's just arrived here, Emma Murinson, focuses on the in-house market. So Emma, welcome to Brain Food Live. Great to have you on the show.
Thanks, Hung. And yes, it was me, random Emma. So hi, everyone. My name is Emma Murrington. I run a membership organization called The Firm. We actually began life as a LinkedIn group back in 2009. So I can't believe it's been that long. But we've evolved since then. And now we're a membership organization. We provide a lot of practical resources, tools, training, events, etc. for in-house recruiters. And everything that we do centres around our four pillars: develop, support, connect, inspire. We do have a paid membership proposition, but it's very similar to James at the moment. We're doing a lot of activities, virtual events, etc., just to try and support members for free.
Yeah, fantastic. And you know what? There's so many people interested in the idea of community. How do you make a great community? Why you should belong to one? And we've got a couple of experts here. I think everyone in the UK would recognize both the Recruitment Network and the Firm to be two of the leading kind of groups of its type, particularly how long you've been working and how much value the community members get from it, and the fact you've actually been able to make a business out of it. So that's actually one of the litmus test, is that do people get enough value to actually, you know, pay to access? And they do in both of those two groups, which I've shared, by the way, in the chat stream there. So if you want to check these businesses out or these communities out, please go ahead and do that. Okay, let's start off with the first question. What is the when you first started community, I'll go to you first with this one, Emma. When you started the Firm as a LinkedIn group, you were still a recruiting manager, weren't you, at the time?
Yes.
So tell me about the evolution of this. You were operationally in the job.
This was when I was working at Unilever at the time, and I'd been working in a graduate recruitment management role. And at the time, there was an organisation called the AGR, Association of Graduate Recruiters, which is now the Institute of Student Employers. So I was very well used to going along to my events, to networking, to benchmarking myself against other recruiters. And then I got promoted into a mid-career recruitment role and suddenly found there was absolutely nothing. I didn't know what other people were doing. I didn't know what good looked like. And this was about the time that LinkedIn had just begun groups back in 2009. A friend of mine had started the group. So I approached him. I said, you know, I think there really could be an opportunity here. Set our first event up a year later. We had 50 people come along and 50 on the wait list. And we thought, actually, there's a real opportunity here. And here we are 10 years later with over 10,000 members.
Wow, that's amazing.
That's impressive.
That's really amazing. So 10,000 paying members of the Firm, is that right?
No, so the LinkedIn group is still absolutely free for all, but 2,000 of them are paying members.
Paying members. Okay, and the LinkedIn group is still going, is that right?
Absolutely, yes. And the LinkedIn group will always be free for all. So we'll never change that. And it's a great window for us in terms of other products and services that we can offer. And also a great way for us to keep interacting with our members and understand insights, etc.
Okay, I'm going to swing back to this. Go ahead, Fanny.
Is there any criteria to join the group? Did you put any rules or?
Yes. And actually, we've received a lot of challenges in the past over this. So we're very specific that you can only join the group if you're in a talent acquisition role. We do allow RPO recruiters to join if they're actually on site at a client, but we don't allow suppliers to the industry to join the group. And I think that really sort of echoes what you guys were saying around it being a safe environment. Yeah. Because a lot of the time when people come to the group, maybe they might be asking for information or insight around suppliers or services, etc., and they won't want to do that, and then suddenly get inundated by lots of suppliers trying to sell them their services.
That's right.
On I'll try to keep track on all the I'll leave you the word. I'll try to type down all the rules or the advices that you give during the talk, and like that we can share it afterwards. But having a specific role definition is was definitely key in your
absolutely.
Case.
Absolutely. Yes, because I think as well, firstly, you've got a common interest. You're providing a safe environment for people. So absolutely, that really works for us.
On that note, Fanny, thank you for making the notes, by the way. I think that's going to be super useful. A quick one, by the way, if anybody's got any questions for any of our guests, please ask them in the ask a question function on the Crowdcast at the bottom of the screen. That's the way we can get to the question. And secondly, by the way, safe people, the sense of safety coming back again, super important. Guess what? Being inundated by sales calls or marketing messaging is not safe. We know this already as people that need to do sales and marketing. If we overdo that, people get really annoyed. And the reason why I think individuals join online communities is specifically to interact with peers, but not be subjected to this type of experience. And James, I think that's the same on agency side. I mean, agents themselves will probably not want to be bombarded by sales calls, right? I mean, when they're in the recruitment network, you also protect that and police that as well, don't you?
Yeah, we definitely do. I have a slightly different take from Emma's, and I think Emma's absolutely spot on with regards to, you know, the role positioning. So we invite people into the recruitment network who are agency owners and senior managers and directors. That's the criteria. We position ourselves very much as an inclusive community rather than an exclusive community. I think that's a really important point differentiation for us, because we don't want to be seen as one of these little sort of, you know, private boys clubs type stuff where we all hide behind sort of these curtains and do our little secret sort of stuff. It's not about that. This is about bringing and sharing as many people as possible who can add as much advice as possible. We have a number of partners, so we do let partners in who are suppliers to the industry to join the community, but they're the ones that we try and filter as much as we can and put guidelines and frameworks around what they can and can't do. I think there is a massive value that if you have the right partners and the right suppliers in the industry interacting with your community, it's actually really positive because they have a very different angle and insight into things that we don't often get seen. You're absolutely right, though, and I definitely agree with Emma on this. That, you know, it's not about selling stuff. This is about sharing, collaborating, supporting, sharing knowledge and insights. From that, a sale might happen eventually. I totally understand that. But, you know, it becomes very crass when people feel that you've got to be sold to be in the club sort of thing. I think it just ruins the whole point of a community.
One thing that is pretty sad from my experience is that it's usually based on a few behaviors to, like, we're really actively trying to sell, which is not at all the majority. And yet because of those few, it has an impact on the total, on the group, on the whole.
Yeah, I think you get that in any environment, right? And I think you're absolutely right, Fanny. I think there's always a few people who put everyone's noses out of joint, and that then changes everything. Our philosophy is we would rather get rid of those few people from our community than change the community ruling to adapt to those people. I think that's what we would rather prefer. We want to maintain that inclusiveness. It's so important for us. Everyone should be able to be part of this. And should feel, you know, you used the words before about safe and being comfortable and that type of stuff. Now, everyone should feel comfortable enough to join a community. I sort of liken it a little bit. It's like when you're at school and, you know, there was a sort of a group of kids over there that you wanted to be part of sort of thing. And it's all like, oh, how do I get into that community? And I think if you feel like you've got a barrier to get past, then that detracts from what the point of the community is.
I disagree with that, James, but I'll come back to it a bit later.
Great.
I think ultimately community is created by exclusion. We'll take a deeper dive into that a bit later. What I want to talk about now, though, you raise a really important point about problem actors and what the policy is on problem actors. Because I've got to be honest, I think I've got a few problem actors in my Facebook group. I've got to be fair. where... Well, it might be me, who knows, maybe I should get rid of myself, but so I struggle to deal with this because I'm one of these live and let live types, to a fault, where, you know, I kind of let it slide, whatever, it's fine, but then I realize, you know what, I do need to step in because this person may be intimidating other individuals, mm-hmm. or setting the wrong tone, and then you find other people not feeling comfortable to interact or contribute because this person is too prominent or these people are too prominent or whatever it is. So I would really love to hear your advice and include you in this as well, Fanny, as a community organizer also. Like, how do you deal with someone who, firstly, a problem actor, I get it, get rid, that's clear. But what if the person is simply a little bit over-enthusiastic? So you don't think this is necessarily a malignant character, but they're just a little bit overdoing it, and maybe they're a little bit unaware about the impact of their behavior. Like, how how would I best address that situation? James, I'll go to you first.
Yeah, I think a big part of running a community, whether it be online, face-to-face or whatever, is where our jobs are to help develop people's skills and ability, develop their knowledge and everything else. So I think it is our duty to advise people, coach them through how they can be, how they're being perceived and how they can improve that perception. I think it's really, really important part of this because, you know, I mean, I run training courses, sales training courses for our partners to show them how to sell to our membership in a right sort of way, because there's a way of doing things, there's a wrong way of doing things. And I want them to make sales because I think it's a great opportunity for our members to buy the right products and tools that they need in their armory, which I think is great. But they're not going to make those sales, not going to have the opportunity to do it if they're doing it in a crass way or they're being overtly over the top or whatever it might be. So I think our job is to coach and support people and raise awareness, otherwise they won't learn.
James, you're coming out with all these bullets here. So you actually are coaching the vendors or the sales, the people who sell into your community, how to do it better. That's genius. That's like really clever because it basically will, I'm sure the vendors want to do the right thing and actually make better sales. And then of course the community is going to want to be approached or connected with in the right way. So I think that's a really clever way to try and neutralize that problem. And also your attitude, I think, is spot on as well. It's like your duty, my duty in recruiting Brain Food is actually to help the people that are making these errors and not, you know, be weak or bottle it or whatever, you know, not consider it to be a top priority or whatever. So that's really, really good input. Emma, let's go to you on that. Problem actor, not necessarily malignant actor, but, you know, just a little bit unaware, let's say. How would you deal?
So similar approach to James. So when it's happened in the past, we do have to pick things up with them. I had an example about a year ago, actually, where an in-house recruiter had just popped a question on the discussion board, just asking for advice around which recruitment agency to use in a sector they hadn't worked in before. And then a very overzealous recruiter underneath said, call yourself an in-house recruiter. You shouldn't be using an agency. You should be sourcing directly. And so, of course, this poor person who put the post is then feeling attacked because they've not been able to ask the question in a safe environment, but actually their sort of credibility has been challenged. So that sort of thing, then absolutely, I do pick it up with the individual because for us, it's very much around positive discussion within the group. And we really try and weed out any negativity. So with that, yes, individuals, we'll just approach them on an individual basis. And like James says, just give them a bit of coaching, a bit of feedback. I do think people have got better over the years. In the early years of the firm, you would just see people blurting out comments, insights, complaining, not really thinking about reputation management. I think these days, with the advent of social media, people are a lot more savvy. They're a lot more careful about what they post. You never know who's going to be reading it. So it definitely has got it easier over the last few years, but it still happens.
Yeah, really good point. So basically, behavior is generally improving as we get more literate about these things. Mm-hmm. There still is a direct offline one-to-one. So what you're saying, I think both of you are saying this, is that you don't publicly rebuke this person. You take it offline somehow. Is that right? I mean,
yes, try to. Actually, some people in the group will publicly rebuke others. So sometimes it's not always the role of the moderator, but other people will do that for you.
I think one of the things of a great community actually is that there's a natural filtering process, so the community itself will filter people. You know, it's almost like a self-managing process. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's really positive, I think, because that shows the system, the community is actually working, providing it's done in a positive way. And it's all about driving positiveness through this process.
That happens quite a lot, actually, because it's quite hard to track within the LinkedIn group who's moved roles. So if somebody has moved supplier side, they normally get outed by another person of the group who lets us know. So that sort of the self-policing, self-filtering is in action.
And you do remove those people, Emma, if they move supply side, you think, okay.
Yes, because we've got to stay true to the purpose of the group. But if they move back again, then obviously more than welcome to come back.
Yep, I love it. You've got to stay hard.
I'll jump ahead, on Fanny. This point because I think it's key is the purpose of the group. And when we say the purpose of the group or the purpose of the community, it has to be very clear what it is. And it has to be, we need to bring awareness on this purpose, but purpose can be also aligned with certain rules. Let's say, for example, the true community is about sharing different experience on a level, on the same level, with no hierarchy whatsoever. So there is no, the rules are, there is no commercial speech, there is no presentation, there is no slides, and there is no name tag, for example. Those rules are everywhere. You enter a true community or a true website, you see this everywhere. Everybody is aware of those rules. So that's when the inner self-regulation can happen, is when everybody is sharing the same level of understanding of what are those rules. And I think this is key in my opinion, online or offline. Make yourself clear about this from the starting point. And maybe some people will enter the community afterwards. Maybe there are still some people entering your community, even though it has been here for 11 years. Then it has to be very well displayed. And that's the role of the moderator, to be able to remind those rules when it's needed, but also to be equal to everybody when those rules or this purpose is not respected. And when you were saying, for example, not telling this person, that is a bit, maybe it was a euphemism when you said too enthusiastic, but I guess you meant like really maybe harsh, trying to sell something or something like this. It has also, it has an impact on the other, and maybe the others needs to see that you have stopped something in a nice way. There are ways to communicate that are like very important. You don't just put someone out, but just to re-clarify why it's not, maybe not too appropriate. And like that, it's seen by everybody and everybody reminds themselves, oh yes, there are rules, and it's the rules for the, every rules is the same for everybody.
You know, I think what? Purpose is so important.
Let me just underline those points that Fanny made, because I think they're super important. Number one, a clarity of purpose and commitment to them, right? You can't just, it can't just be rhetoric. If you do have, this is exactly where, you know, we had this problem with mission statements, because we realized that actually it didn't map to the reality of the culture of a business. In the same way, for a community, you can't just have these values and not actually, they have to be absolutely sacrosanct, which in fact, this leads on to this inclusivity, exclusivity situation, James, which I think I'll touch on again a bit later. I want to get back to this, but I don't want to lose the thread with Fanny. The second point is, I love the visibility aspect of this, in the sense that, yes, it probably is better to do offline, because that's a little bit nicer for the person who, let's say, has transgressed or has caused someone due upset. But there has to be some way in which you can communicate that publicly, so that the other members of the audience or the community can understand, actually, yeah, that's a thing that happened, and this community is protected and is policed, a small p policed. But then, you know, that encourages people to interact. This is something clearly I haven't done, right? So I've let it slide. And I need to now recover this, because I've kind of said, yeah, fine. Yeah, he means well. That's kind of my posture is, yeah, he means well, just clumsy. But maybe that's not enough. I've got to step in and you know. Anyway, where are we? I've lost my thread.
We were just, I was just going to say about purpose, really, because James and I were speaking a few weeks ago, and actually with both of our organisations, I think one of the things that we really have in common is that we're both very purpose-led. And I think for the firm, everything that we do centres around our four pillars: develop, support, connect and inspire. And every decision that we take in the business, everything has to centre around at least one of those four pillars. And James, you're similar, aren't you?
Yeah, very much so. And I think I love this stuff, because we look at our organisations all the time around, you know, what's our company purpose, our mission statement, vision statements, our values. Actually, it's really interesting when you talk around mission statements, purpose and values when it comes to communities, because it's exactly the same thing. And the really interesting piece for me about this is what I found with our community is that we have a very clear set of values as a business. I think people know who we are and what and how we work. It doesn't appeal to everybody. It appeals to a certain type of person. That's fine. And consequently, I think we naturally attract the same sorts of people with a similar value set and similar purposes and that type of stuff. That in itself means that as people come to us in the community, they're already halfway in with the same set of values and purpose anyway. And I think that's really, really powerful. There's lots of communities you can join, right? And they're all different from different strokes, different folks, that sort of thing, which is fine. But I love the idea that actually people just naturally, by the time they get to us, they've already made their decision of who they want to hang out with and that type of stuff, and how they're going to behave when they arrive.
You know what? That's actually a really important employer branding point, isn't it? Because we can take it down to the level of a business. And the idea is that you should communicate your values in such a way that it attracts people that are naturally inclined or naturally aligned to these values, and actually deters people that are not aligned to this. And the communities, as you say, operate in very similar ways. Maybe, in fact, communities could evolve into the next generation of companies, which brings me to the next point, because both of you have made companies from this. And in fact, it's one of the questions that's been asked by Tris Revelle. So I'm going to just ask the question out loud for the audience who can't see this. Tris asks both of you here, did monetizing your community affect engagement? Go to you first, yes. Emma.
I think from a LinkedIn group perspective, then no, because the monetization came from the website and the platform and the events. So I would actually say that from a LinkedIn group perspective, no. We made mistakes, I would say, in the early days. So, for example, just trying to promote too many sponsored webinars, too many sponsored events, etc., so that then the content streams become uneven. So I'd say that's definitely been a learning for us. But no, in terms of the other offerings, that they're on different platforms. So the LinkedIn mm-hmm. group for us is a great window in terms of the business opportunities on the website.
So that's actually a really good point. I mean, simply that you might have the community behavior on a different platform from the monetization in effect.
We tried to move it across onto the website, and it just didn't work. I think people are just very happy and comfortable with the LinkedIn forum. So yes, I mean, you have to try it. You try things, some things work, some things don't. So
amazing. That's a really good technique. Go to you, James. How did monetization affect engagement? In fact, was it ever non-monetized? Because maybe you set it up right from the get-go as something that was a pay-for community to enter.
Yeah, I mean, we have different tiers now, so we have different ways that you can enter into the different parts of the community. Without a shadow of a doubt, monetizing it improves engagement because it's like anything. I think when people are committed, then they really get involved. A great community to me is someone, a member of a community is someone who's willing to listen, willing to learn, willing to share as much as learn themselves. And I think when people put their hand in their pocket and have invested in something, they're more committed to it, and therefore they turn up more. Now, we often are like our membership. I mean, we have our membership community is more than just a community. There's lots of things that you can get. Once you're in the community, it's all free. So we have this entire ecosystem of products and events and tools. There's nothing to buy once you're in our community. That's it. But it's like anything. It's like joining a gym. You can join a gym, pay your monthly fee, but if you don't turn up to all the classes, you ain't going to get very fit. And we've all been there before, right? So to me, what we find is when people actually take something that's free, it has less value, and I don't think they perceive it as less value, and therefore they don't necessarily utilize it as much as they could do. Whereas in a funny sort of way, putting money in your pocket and actually investing in it forces you to use it more. And that's actually a good thing, because then it creates more action and activity in the community. So I think it's been a positive thing for us monetizing it, definitely.
Yeah, that's a really good answer. And it's also kind of probably countervailing from Tris's initial input, because he must have thought, well, I'm guessing, Tris, that he thought, okay, monetization might reduce engagement because suddenly there's a barrier there, but actually it might increase it. The quality goes up because you've got more commitment. And everyone has, if you like, casuals. Again, I don't want to be elitist, but there's a lot of people might join groups, particularly if they're open. Like, for instance, Recruiting Brain Food on Facebook. If you're a subscriber, you can join. Literally, that's the criteria. So there's no cost involved. You simply got to subscribe. I've got to verify that, then you're in. And of course, lots of people are not checking it out. You know, the engagements are okay, but there's going to be a big bulk that don't engage at all. And it could well be that, you know, monetizing it will wash out a huge amount of those people, but, you know, the individuals left would be super engaged from there. How about you, Fanny? What are your thoughts on that? Because I know that True is slightly different in the sense that we're not monetizing from the membership, but we do charge on the tickets, I think, or, you know, there's still sponsors going on. So how does it all work?
It's interesting with True is that there is no specific rules that is distributed over all the True communities over the world. So I know, for example, that True Paris is charging quite a big amount for entry tickets. I know that True London is more charged on the, like they have more sponsors, for example. And in Switzerland, True Geneva, we decided since the beginning to have zero sponsors per license. So we really refuse any sponsor, even though we receive quite a lot of requests. And in terms of tickets, so we have a certain amount that covers the fees and the charge and all this and the food and location. And we add a little amount that we distribute them to charity. And we have a different charity every year. And that's more how we engage with the community and how we try to build this trust system as well. I guess Switzerland is a bit different in that sense and in that relationship to money maybe. So this is a bit a specific case, I would say.
It is, and it's different anyway. I mean, one of the interesting things about this from is, you know, is a paid for community different from a non-paid for? In some respects, no. In some respects, yes. You know, it's quite fascinating. I think from my perspective from the outside in, I would say with Emma's and James's communities, you've got a lot of like corporate interest in there. It's almost like you could treat it as, hey, I'm improving my business by being in this group, because without it, I wouldn't have access to all of this intelligence. So actually your personal value is also aligned with your business value, your company value. Whereas I would say something like True, maybe there's a bit more of a distance there. Like people can turn up and be participants in True without necessarily being that overly committed to their employer, let's say. So maybe there's something there that's worth exploring at some juncture. Okay, we've got a few more questions. Let's pile into those, everyone. Let me just select one here. Okay, we have one from Lisa here, and she's saying, do you have any advice on how to get more engagement to encourage people in your community? So in other words, I think classic scenario, you've got a big old group, 1,000 people in it. Those three people are constantly post. How do we get more action from everyone else? James, we go with you first this time.
Yeah, well, the number one thing that you need to do is understand the community. So I think what happens in as a curator of a community, if that's the right word, or someone who has to direct what happens in that community, I need to understand who's in it, what they need, what they want, what they don't know they need yet, but they will need. And then that our job is to advise them on that and then go and get it for them. So it's like anything. If you look at any community, let's use the analogy of going to a party. You'll go to any party when we're allowed to go to parties again. And there'll be a group of people who are the extroverts, the noisy ones, who are the ones dancing on the dance floor. And there'll be a group of people in the corner, nice and quiet, still having a great time, but they're not interacting in the same sort of way. It's exactly the same thing in a community. And our job is to understand how we can go over to those quieter people and make sure they're still having a good time. They're still getting value out of the party. They're still enjoying what they're getting from it as much as the people are over there. So the way to get engagement once you've got people in the community is understand what they need, help them understand what they think they might need, and then go and get it and give it to them. And then that will then create the opportunities for conversations and interest and so on and so forth.
Can you give me the mechanism to do that, James? Is that a survey? How do you go ahead and do that? Because if they're, let's say, being quiet and they're not actively engaging, maybe they become less visible to a moderator or a curator of the group. How do you go and approach them?
Yeah, well, there's two ways. So number one is assessment. So we run lots and lots of different data points across our business, some which is traditional what do you want type questionnaires. Some are basically using different types of data to understand their business needs, etc. So we have a system, for example, on TRM World called Pulse, which is basically a free assessment. You pump in a load of data about your company. It gives you a complete report about your business, good, bad and ugly, from a recruitment perspective. So that's brilliant. That gives us data and insights. It gives them data and insights. It just sort of works. So that type of stuff is really, really useful. The I think the other piece as well is a lot of people come to communities, I think, because they don't actually know what they need to know yet. Right. So you can ask them the questions, but they don't know the answers. Our job is to make them understand what are the questions they need to be answering themselves and then how to answer those questions, if that makes any sense. So we need to be three or four steps ahead of all of our members to ensure that they are two or three steps ahead of their competition and so on and so forth. consequently, a lot of the stuff that we produce is about telling that person over there in the corner of that party, you may not know this yet, but you're going to sort of need to know this quite soon, because this will get you to the next stage that you're trying to get to in your business type stuff. So one part of it is ascertaining that data from people, questionnaires and pollsters and everything else. The second one is almost telling them what they need to know, even if they don't know, they need to know it yet.
That's I think great. This is key. This is a key point, because otherwise you always feed the loop with like non-relevant information, and the community never evolves to something really interesting.
Well, this is it. It's a classic thing. I find it really funny on social media, and I'm sure a lot of people listening today are really great on social media. We try and be as noisy as we can on social media. But some mornings you sort of wake up and think, right, I need to record a social media video today. What should I talk about? And you just can't think of anything because you're sort of repeating the same sort of stuff over and over again. It's just boring now, you know. So actually, you've got to be able to get insights and data around the markets and all people's businesses to be able to come up with things to then talk about, things to then curate, things, questions to ask to get conversations going, and that sort of stuff. So yeah, it's really interesting from that point of view.
Great stuff. How about you, Emma? Have you got any tips on this? Like, how do you get, you know, revive, if you like, a community? Let's say I'm a community owner. I've done brilliantly. I've got 500 people in there, whatever number it is, but I see the engagement rates going down. Like, how would you intervene as a manager or an admin or an owner?
Sure. I think one of the first things is community owners often worry about engagement by purely threads or comments on posts. And actually, engagement looks very different for very, very different types of people. Some people, as James mentioned before, more extroverted will be out there. Some people actually quite enjoy just reading information and they're looking for the research, the insight, the information. It might be that we run smaller sessions, so smaller online virtual groups. You've got 5 to 10 people and you get a very different type of person coming along to that, as well as some of the larger events that we do. So I think it's just checking in, using a variety of different measures, like James mentioned, with surveys, tools. We onboard all of our clients, all of our corporate clients. We do an onboarding call with them that we do regular check-ins to make sure the team, and also we can see what people are consuming on the site. So we know what topics are popular. We know what people are looking at, and we also know what isn't so much. So we'll always check in with members, and I think that's the best way of doing it.
Mm-hmm. I think, and Hung, I would like to turn this point to you, because I think that's something that you do right and that you are experienced into, is this way you have to ask questions online that are like, and also during those crowdcasts, you ask like open question and you always say, well, I'm here to ask stupid questions, but that also gives the room it gives the room for the community, the audience, whoever is reading or listening to your question, to it gives them the room to share what they know, to share their knowledge and experience, and feel important in a nice way, not in like an egoist way, but in an like, I'm being useful for other people. And that's a need for a lot of people and for like most of the people, to feel useful. And by doing such, I think it also helps a lot in engagement.
Yeah, I mean, I think on that note, thank you for saying that, Fanny. And I will say I probably do that quite well, because I have a problem asking stupid questions. I honestly find it quite interesting just to get the responses. Like, I'm more interested in what other people say than my own thoughts, really. However, that doesn't necessarily re-engage the disengage, because what will happen is the people who already engage will answer the question. So even though it's busy and things are happening, it might still be there's like a big bulk of people that, in your analogy, James, they may be having a good time, but I don't know. They may be having a terrible time or thinking, what the hell am I doing here? But I need to find that out a bit more, because, you know, potentially I've not provided the right sort of experience for them.
But this is it, and I think it's like anything. A big part of it at that party is you need to be the one to go over to them and ask them, are you okay? Are you getting value? Are you enjoying yourself? Do you want a drink? Can I get you a sandwich? Type thing. I don't know where this is going with this analogy. It's going too far, but you get the rough sort of idea. And it comes back into a little bit about as sort of owners of communities, if that's the right word, are we facilitators? Are we curators? Or are we directors of content or advisors? And a big part of what we do is a blend of all three. So we curate, we facilitate, and we allow facilitation, but I've also got to advise. I'm a non-exec director for businesses. My job is to advise them and tell them how to grow their businesses and how to move forward. So you can't not do that as part of it.
Well, on that note, James, I think I've participated in a few of your events you've kindly invited me to, and I was actually super impressed about this structure that you give to the audience. It's like, hey, here's your homework. You can call it homework, don't you? And it's like, hey, we're here to improve. The reason why you're here is to improve your recruiting business. Here's what you got to do to get there. We know this because of the access we have to all of these other businesses that are doing fantastic. So I think that's a really a powerful additional thing to add. Although I would put it to you that it's much easier to do when you've got a very clear understanding of the type of people in the community. For instance, it is recruitment business owners, recruitment leaders, let's say. That makes it easier for you to roll out courses or learning type of material. Whereas if you've got a very diffuse type of community where, you know, the barrier to entry is a little bit looser, and anybody interested can turn up, if you like, then it's harder to produce that kind of value add, I would say.
Go on, Emma. You go.
I was going to say, we see a real life cycle in terms of a community participant. So you see when people first join in a new role, asking advice, insight, support. Then when they're more used to their role, they might just become lurkers for a while. Then when they start thinking about new opportunities, you'll see them start to raise their profile, supportive, helpful, giving a bit of thought leadership. They'll use the group to do their role searching, and then they'll start a new job, and then it starts again. So there is very much a life cycle as well.
And a part of a community, it's people, and people, sorry to say, people is data. And looking at the data, so not on a people perspective, but more on a real data perspective, and analyzing this is also key to see who has opened your emails and your newsletter that you're sending, who is connecting to the community, who is actually engaging or not, and what proportion, how many percent of your community is liking. There are some commenters and some likers and some speaker and some more quiet, but have a clear view on this, and that will really help you to also analyze this and understand your community without only asking. Because sometimes I'm giving answers that are contradictory to what I'm doing. My behavior is often different from what I think my behavior is.
Yeah, and I think with that is a really important point. We learned the hard way when we set this thing up originally, is that we used to produce some amazing tools and content and events that we thought were brilliant, and nobody wanted them. And it was just like, we hadn't looked at the data first. So what we thought was amazing, everyone else thought was rubbish or not necessary or not needed right now. The one thing I will say, Hung, to your point about having sort of a wider demographic, I suppose, of people within your community. One of the things that we made clear from the beginning when we set up the recruitment network is it's not about me as the person in charge of the business, or Gordon, my business partner. It's about the people within the business. So we make it very clear we don't know everything. There are some people who always say they know everything. We don't know everything. We put our hands up and say we don't. But we do know enough people who know together we know everything. So what we have done is we've built a very nice ecosystem of people like the me's, but have got different angles. So actually we can cover most things. So I think the more people like that you have who are in that supporting position, the more you can actually widen and add value to a wider cross-section of people.
Okay, so you're talking about a secondary tier of community members that can step up to provide additional support or value or something like that. Have I got you right there, James?
Yeah, or advisors, so people like yourself. So the reason why we bring you to our events and why we like hanging out with you is because there are certain things that you talk about that I have absolutely no idea what you're talking about, but it's needed by our members and they love it, which is brilliant. So rather than me trying to work it out, second guess, translate from you, I'd rather bring the expert in, which is Hung. Hung, you explain it, you talk about it. So that means we can cover everything. We know the right people who can cover every aspect of what you need to know to be able to grow, develop, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, fantastic. Okay, everyone, we're running a bit short on time. So I just wanted to kind of bring it to a close. Matt, you've asked a question. We actually answered this one earlier. It is about how do we deal with problem actors. Basically, how we deal with it is through offline kind of conversation one-to-one. And then potentially we would announce something publicly to say, hey, listen, we've addressed that particular issue. And then, of course, we might have a rule to say, three strikes and out or whatever, or, you know, you can kind of sin bin people if you want, or do other things to kind of try and provide some sort of corrective mechanism there. Okay, coming to the end of this, let's talk about COVID-19. Let's talk about in-person events. In-person events are a big part of this, right? All three of you running communities, but hey, it was all one of the big center points of bringing everyone together in a room and like, let's get deeper relationships that way. Imagine a world where that can't happen anymore. What is the impact on in online communities as a result? Do they become less valuable, more valuable? Is it harder, easier? What is the impact of actually not meeting in person going forward? Finally, let's go with you on that to begin with.
I'll be quick. I think that this context showed us that it's possible to meet online and in a very engaged way. You gave a very good example with the Brain Food Marathon a couple of weeks ago. We organized several true live online as well. So yes, we're missing maybe this contact, but the value, the content and the engagement remains very crucial and important even when it's online. It all depends on how you're ready to give yourself in, whether it's through a computer or not. And one thing that I would like to add is that it's so fantastic to see, I don't know exactly where you are located right now, but I'm in Switzerland, for example. I've been having some very interesting discussion with people in Canada, in USA, and Australia as well, through those online way of doing it. And physically, it's much harder and much more expensive as well. So,
yeah. I have to say, I agree as well. So we didn't actually think it would be possible to bring the round tables into the virtual environment, but we did last week and it worked really well. I think my top tips for anyone else doing this is that you need to be really organized and you need to have one person keeping an eye on sort of the live stream as you are now hung with sort of the questions coming through, and then one person to actually facilitate and enable the discussions. But actually, it will mean that we can reach a far broader part of our community doing it virtually than perhaps we've been able to do so in the past. So it can work.
And you, James?
Yeah, see, I've got a real thing about COVID-19 at the moment, and it's something I've stuck through with the whole way through. I'm going to stick to it to the end. We have a lot of conversations with a lot of people every day about the situation we're in. And there's a lot of language flying around that it's a really difficult situation that we're in, difficult times that we're facing. We're not in difficult times. We're in different times. We've got to get our mindset right about this. Mm-hmm. If you go back 10 weeks ago and I said to everyone who comes to our events, everyone just stop working as you would normally do, all go work from home, get on with it and see you in 6 months' time, they would have gone crazy at me. But guess what we all did? We all did it. We all got on with it and we're all making it work. And this is now becoming a new habit, a new way of working. So you can look at the COVID-19 situation in one of two ways. It's difficult, it's hard, it's challenging. Sure, of course it is, I get that. But it's also different and creates massive amounts of opportunities. And without a shadow of a doubt, I have never, and this is very similar to what Fanny was saying, I've never in my life been so efficient and engaged with so many people, and yet I am so disengaged at the moment because I'm sitting in my home office, where actually I've been speaking to people all around the world every single day, nonstop for 8 weeks now. And what that creates more than anything is the ability for a community to become even more instant with its support. So if I've got a question, I can get immediate response quickly now, rather than wait till the event to ask the question type thing. And I think this is a real positive opportunity. And you know, people will look at things in all sorts of different ways. I look at it, you know me, Hung, I'm Mr. Positive, I always will be, you can't take that away from me, whatever happens. But I think this is a massive opportunity for communities because it brings it to something which I can walk around. Those 200-300 people I went to the event with a couple of weeks ago, I can walk around with them now in my pocket. If I've got a question, I can ask it straight away and get immediate response because it's now more of a habitual way of working. I think that's really, really positive.
100%. Thank you for sharing this. I think this is a key takeaway for everybody.
Fantastic. And I'll leave it with a final thing. If you are not a member of a community and want to join a community, there is a big list of communities. I think there's over 500 online recruiter communities in that list, crowdsourced from the Recruiting Brain Food community globally. So no matter where you are in the world, hopefully there's a community that's relevant to you in there. Please do check it out. I'm obviously a big believer in the idea of connecting with people that you may not be colleagues with, you may not be immediate friends with, but industry peers. I think we can learn a huge amount from each other. And one of the things I think that positive note again for James on that vibe we can take from this pandemic is that we've shown examples of where communities really come to the fore. And it's shown us a few techniques, or a few things that we can do if we kind of stick together and point in the same direction. So everybody, thank you so much for your time. Fanny Comba, thank you for being a great co-host. Emma Merrington, thank you so much for coming on to the show. James, great to see you again and great to have you on the show as well. Everybody, thank you so much for attending. Hope you've enjoyed watching it on the various channels. I will send everyone a quick email to say, hey, listen, this is what this show is all about. And we'll be back next week, I think, with something interesting. I forget what it was. follow the channel. You tell me what I'm doing next week. Okay, that's about it. Have a good weekend,
thank
everybody.
You,
thanks, thanks everyone.
Thank you, guys. See you.
Bye. Thank you.
Have a good weekend. Bye.
That's it, Fanny. Well, listen, you got some compliments on your map on the wall the other day. I forget who it was that said that. May have been Bass. But don't tell him it's not your wall. It's not your map either. anyway, listen, I'm going to kick you out because the show's over. We'll catch up soon, okay? I'll see you soon.
Bye. Thank you, Hung.